You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. What's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys something. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick.
And
you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Hope you had a nice weekend last weekend. I've actually had a fabulous week, one of the best weeks in a really long time. And I have to recommend Coppola Winery. I spent spent Wednesday there, poolside, drink in hand, in and out of the water. Was there 10 minutes before it opened, and we ended up practically closing the restaurant about 9 o'clock that night. It's one of the best days I've spent. It was so mellow. The weather was perfect. The staff is so friendly. And that pool, there's two elements that combine to just really heighten the experience. And one is the water itself is just really beautiful, and they limit the number of people. So the splashing of the water is louder than people's voices, and I just love the sound of water. But then they have these fountains, I guess you would say, that there's really two pools. There's one that's like, I think, 3.5 and 4 feet, and then there's on the other side, there's one that goes from 4 feet to 7 feet, and there's this little, like, almost a breezeway, except it's water that connects the two, and you can swim through that. But there are these fountains that just spray an arc of water from both sides. So you have not only the sound of water as people are swimming, but you also have this constant sound of the fountains, and it's like music. It's just so beautiful. Anyway, that was my birthday. It's the best birthday I've had as an adult, and I really recommend it. So I'm all relaxed and happy. Went to chicken teriyaki barbecue and bazaar. Today, danced there with my halal, and walked around, had a root beer shave ice. So it's really been a great few days. I hope you've had a great few days, too. There have been so many events going on, and the weather has just been great for it. I thought 4th of July weekend was rather scorching, shall we say. The cool breeze we've had since then has been lovely. And boy, do we have a great show tonight. We have Rex and Carrie Williams from Williams Ranch in Sebastopol. You know them from farmers markets. What you may not know is that really yummy cheese that Oliver's now carries, Bleating Heart. That's B-L-E-A-T-I-N-G. Bleating Heart. Shepherdista cheese is from their milk. On that note, welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to see you here without your hats on and without customers clamoring to get your lamb. And I have to say, your lamb, you slipped a rack into my bag several weeks ago. And I don't know what it was. It's the best lamb I remember tasting. It cooked perfectly. I slow roasted it. But I roasted, I think, at 275 degrees in the oven, but took it out very, very rare. And, oh, gosh, it was so good.
And I'm sure the cook had nothing to do with it, right?
All I really did was set the temperature, put on some salt and pepper, and put it in the oven. So I don't really take a lot of credit for how great it tasted. I mean, I made to go with it. This I'll take credit for. I did potato puree. I think it's a Joel Robuchon recipe. But it's like almost as much butter as potatoes. And that goes really nicely with your rack of lamb, believe me. So tell us about Williams Ranch.
Well, Williams Ranch started in 1990-something or other. I hate to admit it, but we actually bought sheep together out of wedlock. and we started raising sheep. We were married in 93, so we started raising sheep about 90. But at that same point in time, we had the good fortune to run into a fellow by the name of Bruce Campbell.
Ah, Bruce, yes.
And at that point, we were actually helping him run his sheep and spending a little time in the meat room with him and helping him do deliveries for mm-hmm. what grew into CK Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And as time progressed, Carrie and I took over the running of the sheep for Bruce mm-hmm. because he was concentrating on selling lamb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere in the neighborhood of upwards 100 lambs a week.
Yeah.
And so we had to supply as many lambs that were to his standards as we possibly could. And therein lies the challenge. But fortunately, we learned lots of tricks during those years, and we apply a lot of those today.
Mm-hmm. What are the things that you can share? I mean, I'm sure some of it is just partly just intuitive and hard to express, but what is the trick to making really good lamb?
People ask us that all the time at the market. We've even got asked by other ranchers, how old do you process your lambs? What weight? It's not about weight. And it's not about age, although our lambs tend to be processed between 5 and 7 months, and they tend to be right in there at 100 to 115 pounds. Mm-hmm. And that's because it's about their finish. And that's something that I don't do. Rex does. He hand selects every lamb, and that was something that Bruce did.
Mm-hmm.
And he handles every lamb, so
and
it has the right amount of finish. So every lamb is going to be consistent, every mm-hmm. every piece of lamb.
That's the bad thing about experience is it takes so darn long to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But fortunately, like I said, working with Bruce, I learned to walk into a pen of lambs and start handling lambs. And then the absolute priceless education that I received is purchasing a trailer load of lambs, taking them to the processing plant, and then looking at those lambs hanging in the cooler. Actually watching the lamb that I selected walk up the chute, go through the process, end up in the cooler, and I can look at it and say, that was what I was looking for. Oh, yeah, no, that one didn't have as much cover as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he handled like. And that's what he looks like.
Okay, so you're really getting physical knowledge. You're teaching in a way your hands.
Oh, absolutely. I handle every lamb. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, a couple different things I look at. But most of the time, we just handle them right over the loin. And I run my hand over the backbone, and I can tell you how much fat he's got on him and pretty much how much fat he's going to have at the 13th rib. And the reason that fat at the 13th rib is important is that rack that you took home.
Mm-hmm.
That was made from, obviously, the ribs on that lamb. And if you don't have enough fat cover on that rack, it'll dehydrate and it'll get tough as an old
mm-hmm.
shoe
yeah.
in short order. If you have too much fat on that rack, it's going to get that sticky lamb stick to the roof of your mouth thing mm-hmm. that nobody really cares
yeah.
for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I thought that rack had the perfect amount of fat. And it was funny, I think it was just like a week or so before that, a woman was leaving your booth right when I came up, and she was this has too much fat on it, and walked away. And I thought, well, I'm going to open this, but, you know, when you gave me that pack, and I opened it, it's like she clearly didn't know what she was talking about.
Well, there's a few people that come to the and we French back our racks. We take the cap and we pull back, and so we expose the ribs.
Yeah, you expose the bones. They're nice and clean.
Yes.
Makes it very easy to cut. It makes a very beautiful presentation.
Well, we like to think so. But we do have some people that come through there that like to French them back even further than we do it. And which it gets back to the cover thing. When you start Frenching them back too far, you're taking the cover off. You're taking all the sealing off the outside, all that cover off, and it'll dehydrate quicker.
Yeah, you need that. You need that fat to keep it succulent,
but not too much. And this is, we get a lot of folks that try our lamb and say, "Wow, I really enjoyed that. It was mild. It was pleasant. Why isn't this like this when I buy it at the grocery store?" We have to explain to them that the lamb industry is built on their producers are paid by pound.
Yeah.
And so there's no incentive to have less poundage. And there is a point where all that lamb is going to do is put fat on. And so
it'll just start adding fat instead of muscle.
It'll just start adding fat instead of muscle. You'll see racks or other cuts. And if you pay attention, you can see where the butcher has trimmed off the fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
off of your boneless leg of lamb, or off of the racks, you can see where the knife cut is, and that's because there's been so much fat on there. Because that producer, those large commercial producers, they're getting paid on weight, and so there's all incentive in the world for them to just put as much weight on there, whether it's fat or muscle mass. So,
back in the old days when corn was, 7 to 10 cents a pound. If you're feeding that lamb a pound of corn per day, it's costing you a dime. And after 5 days, that lamb is going to take those 5 pounds of corn that he has eaten and turn it into 1 pound of gain. So it costs you 50 cents to put on 80 cents worth of lamb. Well, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that you just made 30 cents.
Yeah.
Okay, well, gee, now let's see if I put 10 pounds on that lamb, I made $3. Well, if I put 20 pounds on that lamb, I made $6. Well, gee, I've got 300 lambs in that pen.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take too much figuring out that the bigger I make them, the bigger the payday. And if it's only costing me, 50 cents a pound to do that, then why not? Why aren't they going to do that? Well, and that has been the downfall of the American sheep industry. The American sheep industry has essentially shot itself in the foot because they take these gorgeous, beautiful lambs that come off of their mother's side at 120 pounds. And you know where those lambs go? They don't go to a processing plant. They go to a feedlot in Colorado.
Yeah, feedlot.
And so they got more miles on them than my Jeep by the time they get to Colorado. And then they get to stay there for 6 or 8 months. So all of a sudden, we've taken a 7-month-old lamb. He's got an all-expense-paid trip to Colorado. Now he weighs 167 pounds, and he's took him 6 months to do that. And then he's going to get back on that truck, and he's going to come back to California. So, where's the sense in that? But it makes them money. It makes them money.
And with that said, there is some shifts in the industry. They're recognizing what the consumer wants. And there's within the larger packing houses, they do have a Pure Grow and some other programs that are paying incentives for producers to produce lambs similar to what we're doing. There's a lot of, one of the things that I think everyone can credit Bruce Campbell for doing is really being in the forefront of the niche market.
Absolutely.
People said it wouldn't last.
Oh, and he was one of the pioneers.
He was one of the first pioneers to do it. And now there's a lot of other people. Posy Lambs and Whole Foods and Posy Lamb Growers. And if folks like Bruce didn't stick their neck out and take that risk, all of us that are selling at the farmers markets or getting into Whole Foods or Pacific markets or these other markets wouldn't have had those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And those growers are trying to grow lambs that are what the consumer wants, grass-fed, smaller cuts and carcasses, and not so much fat on it, because they are getting paid on a quality product and not on poundage. So there is some shifts. It would be wrong to say that the whole industry is still in that direction, but there's still a huge portion of it that is.
Yeah, and there's, and it's interesting. I didn't realize how regional a thing lamb is. My daughter lives in Mississippi, and she's a California girl and loves lamb. There's no lamb in the South. No. She can't buy it.
No. No, we've heard that from – I actually had – we sell lamb at the Santa Rosa Certified Farmers Market in at the Vets Building on mm-hmm. Saturday. We also sell at the Healdsburg Market. It's on Saturday. And we – in Healdsburg, we have a large percentage of our customers that are visitors to the area, and they're coming from all over, not only the United States, but the world. Mm-hmm. And so, and a lot of times they've rented a cabin, or they have a place where they're able to cook. And so they'll come through the farmer's market and buy their dinner for the evening. And it's unbelievable to me how many people I get from Tennessee or Mississippi or Alabama. And they're like, we can't buy lamb. Yeah. Would you ship it to us? Yeah. You know, yeah. It was just really amazing to me.
As soon as they get back from a year, they've been in Europe for several weeks, I'm sending her a box of lamb as a late Christmas present. Because she loves it. And I was surprised, not even in New Orleans, very rarely can you find it. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we're going to be right here. I think we might be getting ready to eat something.
Had a little lamb. His fleece was white as snow, yeah. Everywhere the towel went, you know the lamb was sure to go, yeah. He followed her to school one day and broke the teacher's rule. What a time did they have that day at school.
You should smell the studio. It smells so good. Tell us what we have.
We have our ground lamb. We've done some little mini burgers for you. The ground lamb is something that we can't keep stock of at the farmers markets. People come and buy several pounds from us at a time so they can stock it up in their freezer, because once you've had a lamb burger, you won't go back to regular beef burgers.
Lamb burgers are so good.
You know, and I know one other place that our lamb is featured is at Zazu Restaurant, and they do they do lamb meatballs, mm-hmm. and they said they just don't do any other kind of meat. You know, lamb meatballs are the thing. But we wanted to bring something in to share, and there's the lamb burger is the really hot thing in the summertime on the grill.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Well, and I think it's worth noting here that the thing that makes our ground lamb what it is that you will never find the trimmings in our ground lamb. We grind shoulders.
Oh, okay.
So we could call this ground shoulder. We actually take the trimmings and we sell it for pet food, as you know.
Actually, yes, I do.
And so basically, this is going to be much leaner than what you're customarily going to find at different outfits, because there's a lot of meat cutters out there that just take everything that's left over and run it through the grinder, and hey, that's ground lamb.
Yeah, this is really nice. This will make great dolmas.
Yes, yes, we have people buy it for that.
Yeah.
We have another fellow that buys it and mixes it with Moroccan spices and then puts it in a hero and then puts the cucumber sauce over it. And every time he tells me about it, I start salivating.
It is really, really good.
Now, this is just seasoned with a little salt, pepper, and garlic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a real big fan of putting anything on my lamb, but more lamb. I like the flavor of the lamb, so we're not trying to cover it with anything. And a little, every time we go do a tasting somewhere, it's just salt, pepper, and garlic. And part of the whole thing behind the salt, pepper, and garlic is we want to demonstrate to people how user-friendly lamb really is. There's a lot of people out there that are afraid of lamb.
They're afraid of lamb. They think, some people think it tastes like lanolin. And then there's all the stories about World War II supply ships down near Australia. You know, the supply ship would pull up to the American ship, and the soldiers would stand across because, you know, they did, you know, sort of chain gang moving things on. But when it was the lamb, it would just go all the way to the other side and then overboard because it wasn't really lamb. It was mutton.
It was mutton. Yeah. And, you know, my dad is someone who won't eat lamb because in the service, and he was doing basic training in Alabama, I believe, and they were being fed canned lamb. Canned lamb.
Wow.
Talks about what came in a can and what I'm sure was mutton. But he, you know, you combined the fact that it was canned and the heat and humidity of being in the South and eating something I can't even imagine.
Canned mutton? No, I can't either.
And wow. He won't try it. He won't eat it. And the interesting thing is I think there was a whole generation there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That wouldn't, I mean, because
when men the age to have been in World War II, all the ones I've met, they seem to have a real aversion to lamb.
Right. Well, and we get asked, lamb prices right now are higher than they've ever been in history, and people, live lamb prices, which has caused, of course, retail cuts to be, you know, gone up, and people keep asking it. And I can only tell them what's based on our experience, but our experience is that there is the demand for lamb has just gone through the roof. There's a whole new generation that want to try it and eat it and enjoy it. We're getting a lot of people that their doctors are recommending it.
Really?
If you're going to eat a red meat, lamb is the best. It's the lowest in cholesterol and it's more healthy for you than choosing beef or... And so I get a lot of, my doctor said this is the only red meat I can eat. The other thing, though, is that you combine that interest and that demand with 30 years of a decline in sheep herders in this country and a decline in numbers. And we have the situation that we have now. It's predicted that it'll be 5 years, 5 to 6 years before we see a balance. It'll take us that long, those of us that are raising sheep across the country, to bring those numbers back up to meet the demand.
Demand, interesting. Yeah. I know that, 10 years ago, maybe even less than 10 years ago, lamb shanks, like $2.99 a pound or something, it was like, oh, lamb shanks, whatever. Now, if you can get them, they're way more expensive. They've gotten hugely popular.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just, you know, a little bit of history that right after World War II, from the Golden Gate Bridge to the Washington State border, there were more lambs in this coastal strip. There was more sheep than anywhere else in the United States at that particular time. And as soon as the 70s started to show up, there was a really bad price break. Lambs went to like 40 cents a pound. It was hard. And so a lot of guys sold out. And then the predators started being a problem. And so one by one, these guys started selling out the sheep, putting on cows. And I remember once upon a time when we did work for Bruce, there were 10,000 ewes in Sonoma County. And I want to say that was in 93, 95, somewhere around that part. Mm-hmm. And he bought 8,000 lambs out of Sonoma County. And now there are fewer than like 7,500 ewes in the county. And they've been redistributed. The ones that have mm-hmm. been kept, there's other guys that have been buying them up and guys have been selling out. And, there used to be, I don't know, 20 truckloads of lambs leaving out of here in the springtime. Not so much anymore.
Interesting. But I think with you and the other producers, it is starting to come back here.
It is. There's a lot of, I think there's quite a few producers that are young, young as we are, coming in, back to it. We know folks that have left and are coming back to the uh-huh. farm and embracing new methods in managing. We use a lot of electric portable fence mm-hmm. to intensively graze pastures and manage the feed that we have. We use guard animals.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about
that. We use livestock guardian dogs. We run 6 dogs. We use the Great Pyrenees, and they live with the sheep all the time.
And they like their job, right?
They like their job. We have to admit, we have one in the backyard, but that was because I had a runt in the litter, and Rex bottle fed her. And it's cool. It's his baby. And she'll go out and check the sheep, but then she's really happy to lay on the back porch. Uh-huh. But no, they're born in the barn, and they're raised with the sheep from the first day they're born. And as they're weaned, they're just put with a group of baby lambs, like my bottle lambs, my orphan lambs. And from 6 weeks on, they're living with those lambs. And so they think they're a sheep, and they know their responsibilities to take care of those sheep.
Oh,
it's
so
just very instinctual. And so they stay with the sheep, and they're very happy. And if you take them away, periodically we'll rotate one back to our home place mm-hmm. To get clipped or to go for vaccines mm-hmm. or do something with them. And they're very unhappy mm-hmm. until they get back out. They want to have wide spaces to roam and be out with the mm-hmm. sheep.
Now, what are some of the problems that they have to deal with? I mean, predator-wise, what are the predator problems? I would assume coyotes, mountain lions.
Yeah, we've got coyotes and the mountain lions. And, we run sheep on both sides of the Laguna. And we've actually had a mountain lion out there that makes the loop out there.
Uh-huh. They need dinner too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The thing is what the guard dogs are hardwired to do is they go out at night and they bark. And so if you've got any neighbors close, probably not a good idea to get a guard dog. But they bark mm-hmm. and they run the perimeter. And they bark. And they let all the predators know that I'm in here. Uh-huh. And like the males go around and mark the fence. And the predators come up and they smell that. And they go, whoa, there's something a lot bigger than me in there. I think I'm going to go look for another restaurant. And so very rarely do the dogs ever have to physically tangle with a uh-huh. predator. Just the mere presence that they're in there is enough to deter them from uh-huh. coming in. Mm-hmm.
And we've actually seen coyotes in the neighboring pasture, walking mm-hmm. through at dusk. And, we hear them how we know there's a den in the neighboring field next to us. Mm-hmm. And in all the years we've been in the Laguna, the last mm-hmm. 5 years we've been down at the ranch that we actually took over a property that Bruce Campbell had.
Mm-hmm. And we should say that Bruce is no longer doing any lamb. CK Lamb.
He's retired.
He's retired.
Yeah, he's retired. Yeah, we took over a ranch that he had leased, and we bought the remaining sheep that he had when he decided mm-hmm. to retire. And in all the time in running at that laguna, we've not had any coyote hills. Oh. We did, like Rex said, we had a mountain lion come through a couple of months ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, the count. We do still have county trapper services. They're being cut a lot, but they came out. And
do they just relocate?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure whether they live trap or relocate. And mostly, you know, it's we usually get a trapper out just to kind of confirm what we think we know.
Oh,
You know, we think this is what was out here. Do we see any? Do you see anything we don't see? And they look and they go, "You have guard dogs. You don't need me." There's, you know, cool. I mean, it's the best situation. Uh-huh. They will, like I said, avoid the area the sheep run and go somewhere else. And we don't have to set any traps or poisons or do anything like
great.
That.
Great. Great. That's a happy thing. Now we got the cheese. How do you milk a sheep? I've always wondered and I've never asked.
It takes patience.
Yeah.
They have these really little teats. we get asked that question a lot. The sheep dairy is new. The name that the dairy is Black Oaks Sheep Dairy. Mm-hmm. And we're a grade B, licensed grade B. And we've just completing our first full season. We milked 15 sheep last year. And we're milking 54 now. Uh-huh.
How long does that take?
The milking actually takes about an hour. We have the sheep actually come up on a platform that's about waist high, and we don't milk them by hand. We do have the little machines, similar to goats. I mean, it's very similar to goats in terms of how they get milked. I have the ability to milk four at a time, and then I switch to the other four, and then they get their grain, and then they walk down the ramp, and eight more come up. Mm-hmm. So that process takes about an hour. For those,
mm-hmm. for all of them, for 54.
All, yeah. And okay. then there's an hour. The whole milk process is a 2-hour process in morning and night. They are milked twice a day. And our sheep, milk goes to our business partner is Shauna Dowdy with Bleaching Heart Cheese. And she's a partner with us on the dairy. And then she is the cheese maker. Mm-hmm. And she does an aged raw milk cheese, mm-hmm. which just recently is started being sold in all the Oliver's markets.
And I have to say, it's really beautiful.
Well, and wait till you smell the grass.
Should we unwrap it?
We should. Rex can't smell the grass, but everyone else can really smell the grass. She also does a cow's milk cheese. But we sell 90% of our sheep's milk goes... Oh. Wow. Goes directly to Bleeding Heart Cheese. We do sell some milk to Valley Ford mm-hmm. Cheese. Karen Bianchi makes a sheep-cow blend, which she sells at the farmer's market and has won some awards at the state mm-hmm. fair just recently. She has also bought our milk mm-hmm. to do an aged cheese.
The aroma on this is just exquisite.
Okay, it's just like a glass of wine. Now that you've got the nose, you've got to try a little bit.
Okay, you can talk me into it. I will cut off a little here. Talk about the rind. She has an interesting... It's wild.
She doesn't
put anything on it.
she does soak it in a brine. And you know, we were talking before the show. The next show you have to have is the cheesemakers in. And get Shauna in here to tell you. Because one of the things about doing a sheep dairy... Rex and I bought our first sheep in the 1990, but I've had sheep since I was 8 years old. Mm. And our goal is to make a living off of sheep. And so in doing that, we've looked at all the different ways that...
Don't tell me you have a day job.
I do not.
Oh, good.
I do not.
But I do.
Rex does.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
He still does. The goal is that he won't. But I haven't had a day job. This is my day job. It's been my day job for 4 years now.
Good. Okay.
100%. And so in, you know, doing that, we were looking at all the different things that sheep produce, milk, wool, and meat. And we've been interested in doing sheep dairy for many, many years. There's a lot of limitations, especially in Sonoma County. In Marin County, you can have a creamery. It's seen as part of the dairy operation. In Sonoma County, you have to have a use permit.
No,
a creamery to make cheese.
Okay. So you can have the dairy, but you can't have the creamery?
You can't have the creamery. So Shauna rents creamery space from a licensed creamery. So that makes it a little difficult. Putting in a dairy is not a small task or an inexpensive task. And you have to, of course, have a home for your product. Shauna was... Shauna, and you'll have to have her come in and tell you all about her story.
Yes, definitely.
But long story short is I was helping at the Farm Bureau a year and a half ago, and there was a flyer of a woman who had bought dairy sheep and was a cheesemaker and was looking for someone to partner with her. And I looked at it and read it, and she had moved up here from San Diego and was going to be in the sheep. And I thought, oh, my gosh, another one of these relocate, going to get back to the farm.
Yeah.
And I didn't throw the flyer away. I hung on to it for about a week. And what's the matter here? Why can't? And so I finally called, and we spent the next 3 hours on the phone. We just hit it off. And it's sort of a perfect marriage. She wants to make cheese. I have no inclination to make cheese. Mm-hmm. I want to have sheep and have them be productive mm-hmm. and profitable so we can continue to be farming in Sonoma County. And so,
great match.
It was. It's a marriage made there.
Mm-hmm. So this cheese is really yummy. It's. I'm trying to think of the right. Well, yummy is definitely one of the operative words. It's intensely flavored, but it's intensely flavored mid and back palate, and it's more gentle in the front palate. It's full. It's got layers of flavor. I see what you mean about the grass. Warm grass. Absolutely warm grass. It is a lovely cheese.
Well, and the thing that I get, I've tasted a lot of sheep cheeses, mm-hmm. and a lot of people don't know what I'm talking about, but when you eat a sandwich, when you're all done shearing at lunchtime, you still have some of the lanolin on your fingers,
okay. mm-hmm.
and some of that cheese tastes exactly like licking the last bite of the sandwich off your fingers after shearing. But this has none of that. I really love it.
It's really, really
I'm
nice.
I'm still not getting the grass out of it, but that's just
me. Understand why he says he doesn't.
It may have something to do with the fact that I've been cutting hay for 3 days. I don't know.
It's warm grass. It's not cool grass. No. And like in wine, if you start talking grass, it's usually cool grass.
Right,
but
if you think
of grass that's warmed by the sun, or grass after it's cut and it's a sunny day, that's what I see.
Mm-hmm.
It's really lovely. Let's take one more musical break. We'll be back with more talk about sheep farming in Sonoma County.
Thank you.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle and Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us. Hope you're enjoying the hour as much as I am, or almost as much, because boy, is this lamb and cheese really delicious. It's just really good. Excellent product. And like you said, salt, pepper, a little garlic. It's just so pure.
Don't you can't it. Hardly mess it up.
No, you can't. You can't. It's invigorating. Simple food from great ingredients. I mean, on one hand, that's such a cliche these days, but it's so true. It's just so true with products like these. So the sheep's milk cheese, and see, even Joey agrees. In fact, you should have seen him last night. I cut all the it was this morning. I cut the meat off of the neck bones, and then I gave him a neck bone, which is almost as big as his head. But he carried it. He was able to lift it up, and he was so happy for several hours. The cheese has just come out at Oliver's.
Yes.
And it's Shepherdista from Bleating Heart. You're going to start selling at the farmer's market?
I am.
And which farmer's markets do you attend?
The Santa Rosa, Saturday morning at the Veterans Building.
Is that every week now?
No, we are, they're the second and fourth Saturdays.
Okay. Second and fourth in Santa Rosa.
Saturdays. Yes. And then the first and third Saturdays, we're at the Healdsburg market.
First and third in Healdsburg. And will you have the cheese in both places?
I will.
Okay, great. So yeah, this is the sort of thing you have to put on your calendar. When is Williams Ranch in the market closest to you? So if you're in Healdsburg or near Healdsburg, that is the first and third Saturdays. If you're near Santa Rosa, it is the second and fourth. And it's just those two markets that you attend?
Right now, that is the two markets that we're attending, yeah.
And then Zazu?
Zazu features our lamb. And we also do a little bit of goat. We've had a goat herd, and we have it in partnership with another rancher that has a small goat herd. And she raises up the baby kids for us. Mm-hmm. And in the summertime, we have some goat. Zazu has featured our goat this last week on their menu. Mm-hmm. And we'll be using some goat in the next couple of weeks. And we'll have, you know, goat on the market during the summertime.
Goat's a summertime thing.
Yeah, goat's a summertime thing.
And then any other restaurants right now?
Not right now.
Okay. No. And then if people absolutely cannot get to a farmer's market, is there any other way?
We do have one webpage just with our contact information, and they can certainly, I have a lot of people email us, and we will always accommodate our customers.
Okay.
We do not have a storefront, farm store.
But you can work something out.
I always work something out. I've had many people email or call us, and you know, they have a big event, they have a party, they're having guests over, and it's Thursday night, you know, and they're calling me on Tuesday, can we get something for Thursday night? And we always accommodate.
Cool. And the website it's Williams Ranches.
Ranches.com.
Yeah, there's a lot of Williams Ranches out there, so you have to do it. Don't do Williams Ranch, because I think that's somewhere, I don't know, in Illinois or something.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Or you end up with Williams Ranches real estate over in Rio Vista, Jack Williams.
Oh, okay. So, but I will also.
And he doesn't sell lamb.
You know what I'll do? Actually, right now on Mouthful's Facebook page, there's a link to your website.
Is there?
Yeah. Okay. And I will just make sure. Because I said that you were coming on. So that's one way that you can just click through on the Mouthful Facebook page.
It's been my downfall, is getting our website up and our whole being part of the social media.
You mean you don't stay up all night? Because it sounds like you're working pretty hard.
I'm milking two shifts.
I know. The only reason you are able to be here is because you're not milking tonight.
Because I'm not milking. Yeah, we milk at 5 in the
morning.
Evening.
Oh, 5 in the evening.
We milk at 6 in the morning. And 5 in the evening. And I have a great student who's here from Cal Poly home for the summer. And he's doing some milking for us. Mm-hmm. He's actually in Valley View, Jersey. Is that their name of their dairy? Well, his mom is Karen Bianchi with Valley Ford Cheese, and her son Jim is home for the summer. He's worked on the dairy at Cal Poly, and mm-hmm. he's a dairy science major, and he is helping us. He wanted to find out what it was like to be on a sheep dairy. And the funny thing is we talked for a month or two before he came home for the summer, and when he got there, he said, "You mean we're not going to have to milk them by hand?" So he took the job thinking he was going to have to milk 50 sheep by hand. And I guess his mom, who knew better, let him go with that mm-hmm. for, you know, a month or two before he got there.
It's probably good for him on some level. You mentioned wool just in passing. Do you do anything with wool?
We do. We don't do a lot. We do it mostly in the fall and the winter. We have our wool. We have Dorset sheep, and those are your typical sort of coastal, what they call a coastal white-faced breed. And the reason we run those sheep is they do a nice job with a medium wool as well as a nice meat sheep, and they mm-hmm. get fat on grass. They don't mm-hmm. they don't really need anything else. And they'll breed out of season, so year-round. So we lamb mm-hmm. at two different times so we can have lamb available all year-round. And mm-hmm. that was, you know, one of the things that Bruce did. Anyway, we take some of our fleeces, and we send those off to make batting and make wool comforters.
Oh, nice.
And I work with a local seamstress in Healdsburg, and she makes comforters for us. And so at the farmer's market in the fall and winter, mm-hmm. we sell comforters.
You sell comforters?
We sell comforters. Wool comforters.
For people who are allergic to down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
it's just like I always say about down comforters and wool comforters. You know, the goose and the down comforter, that old girl was committed. Now the ewe, she was just involved because she's going to go out and make me another one next year. So it's really a sustainable kind of bedding.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's interesting. What? I've never slept under a wool comforter.
Oh, and once you do, you will never sleep under anything ever again but a wool comforter.
Tell me why.
We have had one on our bed for 18 years or something to that effect.
The same one?
The same one.
Okay.
They really hold up. They breathe. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, it's wintertime. Well, they breathe through the summer. Ours does not come off of our bed.
Oh, really?
And yeah. They don't shift. Like your down comforters tend uh-huh. to shift. After a while, the feathers all shift to a pocket or, uh-huh. you know, over to a corner. So wool doesn't do that. And so it's merely, and we hang ours out once a season.
Mm-hmm. You hang it outside for?
We hang it outside for 24 hours.
Let it air out. Sure. Put it back on the bed.
Really?
Yeah, and, with the duvet over it.
And just, that's enough.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's about 2.5 inches thick, so mm-hmm. it's not really poofy, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, like some of the down comforters, they're kind of poofy and squishy. But
2.5 is pretty good.
But the cool thing about our wool, being as it is a medium wool, and a medium wool, but without getting really technical, wool is based on coarse, medium, and fine wool. Now, your sweaters that you're going to wear that are all warm and fuzzy and toasty, those are made from fine wool sheep. Mm-hmm. Those are your merinos, your rambouillets, all of your wool-type sheep are all fine wools. They have a very tight crimp in their wool. They have very fine fibers. Mm-hmm. The medium wool, like we have, doesn't have the tight crimp. It's more like a rough coil spring, so it's got a memory. So when you sleep on it and you mush it all up in the bed, and when you take it and poof it, and it's flat and it looks mm-hmm. just like it was brand new.
Cool. What do they? How much do you pay for something like that? What's the cost? I figure. I mean, if you got something that's going to last you
forever,
20 or 30 years,
you know, queen size wool comforters run $300.
God, I nailed it. That's what I was going to guess.
Yeah, but they do last. Mm-hmm. And like Rick said, it has several, had a lot of people buy them this winter. Mm-hmm. I offered them at the farmer's market, kind of a special, you ordered one and then you get
really
one.
Really want one. And I'm feeling the lust rise. I really want one.
And all of those customers that come back, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, I can't even believe how wonderful this is. You know, wool bedding is another market that's just taking off right now. Wool mattresses, because wool is fire resistant and it's dust mite resistant.
Dust mite resistant?
Yeah, dust mite. No, nothing will live in the wool. The other thing is that, you know, you've got a product that isn't like your commercial made stuff with formaldehyde right. and other bad chemicals in it. So a lot of people that are dealing with fibromyalgia or maybe Lyme's disease or
just allergies.
Yeah. I just got an email last week from somebody whose son has super bad allergies, and they've gone to a wool mattress and they wanted to buy a wool comforter. And yeah, so.
Cool.
And there's some companies here in California that are doing the wool mattresses and the
wool. Yeah, I paid a little bit of attention to it, but not a whole lot.
I think Just Living was in Sebastopol. They had a storefront in Sebastopol.
Yes.
I believe they still have a website, mm-hmm. and they still, I see them periodically at the Sebastopol Farmers Market, and they carry a lot of wool
bedding
products.
That's right.
Yeah, and then Shepherd's Dream is up in Yreka, mm-hmm. and they do a whole line, mostly online sales. And that was formerly Jance Design in Sebastopol.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That was taken over from Ilya's. Ilya's daughter took that over and made Shepherd's Dream up in Yreka. So, and they're doing a whole line of wool bedding products.
Yeah. And like you said, it's sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. The goose is committed, but the sheep is involved. Well, we've got 4 minutes here. So I think for our last little bit of conversation, I want to know, other than these delicious lamb burgers, I want to know some of the ways you enjoy your own lamb.
Boy, other than doing the lamb burgers, our favorite thing to do is a boneless leg, which Rex calls the lamb tri-tip. So it's a butterflied leg. And we actually add one more thing to the garlic salt, and we throw it in some wine. Mm-hmm. And we let it sit, sometimes overnight, but usually it's only an hour or two.
Red
because
or white?
Red.
Okay.
And, I don't know.
You smash up, you know, 4, 5, 6 cloves of garlic and throw it in the wine and then just forget about it.
We'll sit and then we'll throw that out on the barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're having guests over, that's our choice.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing we'll do is we'll take our riblets. And we do the salt and pepper with maybe a little Worcestershire or something, but we put the riblets on the grill while we're waiting for the leg to cook because the riblets take about 2 minutes a side, and then we cut them up, and so they're just little nibbles, finger food, and people get to walk around like a caveman and gnaw on the bone, and everybody's really happy.
Everybody's happy. Back to the sheep's milk just a little bit. What does sheep's milk taste like?
It's sweet. Now, I'm a person that I like goat meat, but I do not like goat dairy products.
Some people are really sensitive to it.
I'm really sensitive to it. I always have been. I mean, we raised goats when I was a kid, and my sister milked goats, and I really have a really strong reaction to it. And so I was really nervous the first time I tried sheep's milk because I'm not going to raise a product that I don't want to eat myself, and it doesn't have that sort of goaty, gamey flavor that I associate with goat dairy products. It's very mild, very sweet.
It has a much higher, lower yield, higher fat content.
Higher fat content, yes.
And it's a different kind of fat. My understanding is people who are lactose intolerant can eat sheep's milk products, I believe.
Yep. You know, that's what I've heard a lot, including my mom, who's lactose, and she says, oh, I get the, you know, she gets Bellwether Farms sheep's milk yogurt and just loves that, and she can't have any other
yogurt.
Best yogurt
in Sonoma County. Yeah. Oh, my God, that yogurt is so...
That yogurt's amazing.
Yes, it really is. Well, listen, I am so happy that you two were available on a Sunday night, especially at the last minute, like this was. And I just wish you such great success. You're just what Sonoma County needs, farmers like you guys.
Thank you.
And products like this, you know, and bless Bruce Campbell's heart for getting everything started. And it's so great to see who he's passed the torch to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. And thank you for tuning in. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Don't forget to visit your nearest or furthest farmer's market sometime this week. Take care of yourself. We'll be right back.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing,
to the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. Time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, let praise be.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now, let's go.
We got some beans
and good cornbread.
Listen
to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, let praise be.